daven for, you know, very good things. What I wanted to focus on today is an aspect of Achremos, for those who, you know, who looked at the Makoros, you know, Ben Yisrael Amim, which is the prohibition of Chukos Hagayim, which I'm not even going to try to translate because any translation will already betray a certain direction in the, you know, Shas and the Poskim, and then I don't want to do that. But having a lot to do, as the title indicates, Ben Yisrael Amim, with the differences between, you know, Am Yisrael, Goy Echad Ba'aretz, not just one, but as the Rav used to like to say, a singular people, and the nations of the world. Nations of the world, of course, were invested in them, and in the individuals, as Tzelem Elokim, and, you know, take a look at Rabbeinu Yonah's comments at a different time on his Palo B'Shlomo Shel Malchus, and you'll be very inspired about, you know, our investment in, you know, world civilization, and our engagement with that is, you know, obviously very, very critical at so many different levels. And, you know, we're very proud Americans, of course, you know, here. You know, at the same time, this, you know, prohibition, Chukos Hagayim, and we'll take a look at some of the psukim in just a moment and then turn our attention to more, you know, halachic analysis and try to get to some of the points in the Haftorah in the end, you know, that concern this issue, is something that we all need to be thinking about, you know, a lot right now, watching, you know, to be, you know, candid about it. The, you know, essentially, you know, the full-scale a dissolution of, you know, Western civilization per se, you know, and most graphically embodied by its elite institutions of higher learning that have become, you know, scenes of, you know, utter mayhem, you know, is an inflection point, and it compels us to think more deeply and more critically, you know, Bein Yisrael La'amim, what exactly we're trying to accomplish, what are our goals, you know, what are the means to those goals. This is really a time to think that through. That's part of the, you know, the Cheshbon HaNefesh that we have to, you know, we have to go through. It's a perpetual issue. We say every Motzai Shabbos, you know, Mavdil Bein Kodesh L'chol, Bein Or L'choshech, Bein Yisrael La'amim, Bein Yom HaShavi L'sheish Yisrael HaMasa. It's not that we're not, you know, always thinking on to some extent about it, but, you know, if you're not thinking about it right now more intensively, person must not be paying attention, you know, at all, or at least not in an objective way to, you know, what it is that's transpiring in front of, you know, our eyes, and what that would compel us to think about, and, you know, what exactly the Torah wants from us. Obviously, on the one hand, as I just, you know, iterated, if Jews are going to be able, you know, to serve as, you know, meaningful contributors to Yeshuvo Shel Olam, which we should be and we must be, there has to be, you know, some kind of an interface point, clearly. This is the Rav's, you know, very famous, you know, approach, and, you know, Ger V'Toshav Anochi Imachem, in confrontation. But at the same time, you know, where the boundaries are and what the boundaries are, and my argument is that they wouldn't be beyond a certain point necessarily, and we'll see this today, fixed. It's not a one-size-fits-all, and sometimes the boundaries have to change based on, you know, what exactly, you know, is going on. The Rambam, just to, you know, illuminate this point in Hilchos Deos, you know, in Perek Vav, so he begins with this exact discussion. He says, you know, people are influenced by their surroundings. Derech b'yaso shel adam li'os nimshach b'deyosav uv'masav achar, you know, anshe medinaso. It's just part of the human condition. And the Rambam says, you know, therefore it's really incumbent upon us to try to live in a moral and upstanding civilization, and you know, if you can't find one, the Rambam talks about, like, literally running for the hills, which is you know, a really remarkable comment, that a person, you know, has to be so concerned about, you know, this level of influence, that he should isolate himself. So the Rambam is clearly already indicating, you know, the idea that boundaries can and should change, you know, depending on the context of what is happening, you know, around a person, what is happening in a society. I was having this experience a little bit last night, and right here in Teaneck at a Board of Education meeting. We get straight to the Makoros after this, but if you're sitting in a room for a few hours and you're hearing people repeating insidious things about the non-existence of Israel, Jews as Palestinians, which was quite a chiddush, and without any critical thinking behind it, you're just saying, just like there's gravity, there's a genocide going on against the people of Gaza, like equating those two things, not saying it as an opinion, not saying it as a conviction, but saying it as if it were as obvious as, there's gravity in the world, or, there's water in the ocean, which is, really, and you sit around for a few hours, you can start to think about that Rambam, and, it is a very, very powerful thing, and you can imagine kids going to school in an environment like that, and what the chilling impact of that certainly is. So, it's a very challenging and difficult, thing to explore for us, but I think a very necessary thing. So if you take a look with me, what I want to try to develop here is a nuance between the presentations that we have, in Acharei Mos and Kedoshim. Very often we read, Acharei Mos and Kedoshim together. This year we have the benefit of reading them apart, which I think can actually be particularly helpful in terms of, highlighting some of the distinctions here with respect, to these issues. So the Torah tells us in Acharei Mos, Bonnie's the first person. Bonnie, can you see my screen? Is my screen showing up here for you? Okay, great. Thank you. All right. Vayidaber Adonai Moshe le'emor, daber el b'nei Yisrael v'amarta lehem, Ani Adonai Eloichem, kimaaseh eretz Mitzrayim asher yeshavtem ba lo sasu, uchemaaseh eretz Kanaan asher ani miveizchem shama lo sasu, v'chukoseihem lo seilechu. So a specific injunction against behaving as the Egyptians behaved, behaving as the Canaanites behaved, where you were, where you're going. Es mishpatai tasu, v'eschukosai tishmiru leches bohem, ani Adonai Eloichem. Ushmartem eschukosai v'es mishpatai asher yaso sam hadam v'chai bohem, Ani Adonai. So Torah is telling us that in contrast to sort of going with the approach of Mitzrayim or Canaan, we have to embrace the Mishpatim and the Chukim of the Torah, which interestingly enough the Halacha would make it sound like as long as you're following a mitzvah of the Torah, you have nothing to worry about in terms of Chukos Hagayim. That point itself is very controversial, as we'll see between the Ran and the Vilna Gaon and many others, based on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, as we'll see. So the way that you, I think, would interpret it is that you have these kind of poles. You have Canaan and Mitzrayim, and that has to be rejected, mikol v'akol. And then you have Chukim and Mishpatim of the Torah, and that should be embraced, immersively. Asher yasa osam adam v'chai bahem kim chayenu. Then in Parshas Kedoshim, I think very subtle but very important, Ushmartem is kol chukosai. You have the second source. Ves kol mishpatai ba'asisam osam v'lo salki eschem ho'aretz asher ani miveizchem shama l'shev esba v'lo salchu b'chukos hagoy asher ani mishalech mibneichem ki es kol elo asu v'akutz ba. So here the presentation is much more connected with Yishuv Eretz Yisrael per se, and then I think also very dramatically, the Torah tells us that if we will behave as they did, bechukos hagoy, then, like mida keneged mida, the punishment will be, right, that the land will eject us and we'll be with them. In other words, here, right, you don't have this in Acharei Mos. In Kedoshim, what we're saying is, it's very, very deeply related to Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And number two, if you don't appreciate this, then you'll lose that separate place and that separate space. That Eretz Yisrael is just not going to be able to abide these chukos hagai. It's very sensitive to them. That's why it ejected those peoples, and it will eject you just the same. The irony, of course, being then you'll be much more subject to, immersed in, those foreign cultures, foreign to Yada. So here it's a matter also of spiritual, and national self-preservation, in some sense, the onesh for chukos hagayim is to be then, you know, nisbolel bein ha'amim. And I think that dimension is also, you know, extremely significant in terms of adding a certain degree of poignancy and urgency to this topic. So the Rambam has a presentation that I think is really the place to start. And I acknowledge outright, I would never want to, you know, verbalize saying like, you know, I felt discomfort. You would never say that about a Rambam. But let's say, you know, this Rambam in, you know, earlier years was something that, you know, was less immediately resonant with me. I would say that. But the Rambam's doctrine in both the Sefer HaMitzvos and then maybe even more so in the Yad HaChazaka really is in its own right a critical understanding of Chukos HaGayim, an expansive understanding of Chukos HaGayim, and one that I think hits exactly the note that we started with today. So for the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos says the following: He's Yirani Milachas V'Darche HaKom. So the ways of the idolaters to practice as they practice, in terms of their, you know, customs. The Rambam says their dress, their forms of gathering. That's an ambiguous expression. What exactly does that mean? Sort of, you know, the customs that they've inherited from their avos. Does that mean, you know, uniquely avodah zarah? Does that mean things that are, you know, inscrutable, that have no rationale to them? These are points that we'll see. A certain kind of armament of those in the cavalry. So the Rambam talks about, you know, the importance of establishing distinction, and not just distinction in the sense of, you know, you'll keep your you know, you keep your, in your laundry, you keep your whites and your darks separate. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you have like a, you know, a hierarchy. I don't know, maybe people do, but, you know, we just keep them separate for practical purposes. You know, sometimes separation can just be a tactical matter, you know, but here separation is because, you know, we are megane kol chukoseihem, right? That we deride, you know, their practices and even, you know, bimalbush, the way that they dress. I always add, you know, with something of a smile whenever I talk about chukos hagayim. You know, when I was, a youngster, the worst chukos hagayim in the world, you know, more than, sorfin al hamalachim, or, you know, different forms of hereg that we'll see in the Gemara, were blue jeans. Nothing could rival blue jeans. Black jeans, not so much. But blue jeans, that was, okay, so that was, I guess a little anecdote there. But, you know, that was always like, you know, the point of demarcation. But the point is, kidding aside, the Rambam, you know, talks about, you know, separation. Now, again, the Rambam here is clearly talking about Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and, you know, those are familiar with him, you know, Meiri's contributions and Umos, Hagiduros Bedas, and there's a lot of literature about that. But the point that I'm going to make, you know, takes on proportions, irrespective of that discussion, based on what the Rambam wrote next, okay, where I think the Rambam took a major leap forward in his thinking about this issue. So the Rambam writes in the Yad HaChazaka, "In holchim b'chukos ha'ov de'kochavim, lo medadim lehem lo b'malbush, lo b'seyer, v'chayot z'ben, shenemar v'lo selchu b'chukos ha'goy, v'nemar v'chukos seyhem lo selechu, v'nemar v'yishar melecha pentina keisha achareyem. Hakol b'nin echad u'mazir, shelo yedam elehen." So we shouldn't be similar. "Ela yihye ha'yisrael muvdal mehem." The Jew should affirmatively be distinct, viyadua b'malbusho, and immediately recognizable in his garments, uvishar ma'asav, this is the inspiring part to me, and in his actions, kimo shehu muvdal mehen, b'mada'o uvedeyosav. V'chein hu omer v'abdil eschem inamim. This isn't just about repudiation of Avodah Zarah, for sure. So he says, just as the Jew thinks differently, right, conducts himself distinctively, has a unique moral and ethical code, b'mada'o, b'deyosav, etc. So, the externals should reflect the internals in this way. So he should be yadua b'malmusho as a reflection of the more essential distinction that he thinks in not just monotheistic terms, right? That's maybe mada'o, but b'deyosav, connotes, all the things the Rambam talks about in Sefer Mada and Hilchos Deos about, our moral ethical code. So here, the Rambam's argument for affirmative, distinctiveness and singularity, is a very, very powerful one. Yiya ha-Yisrael muvdal mehem. Right? Bein Yisrael la'amim has to be stark. So then the Rambam says, in practice, what does this mean? Lo yulbash b'malbush ha-miyuchad lahem. So if there's, malbush, which is miyuchad for the gayim, that becomes, restricted. Every few years this becomes popular amongst, boys in Teaneck, and we have to fight it. That's a little bit more exotic, not so much. So it happens to be, there's different interpretations, but my reading of the Rambam in the very practical side is somewhat more, liberal, I would say. I'll come to something at the end of this year, hopefully today, which will reinforce this point, that it really has to be something distinctive for them. But if the Rambam at a practical level, gave more than other Rishonim and Achronim did, conceptually, he certainly was the most, I don't want to say strident, but he was the maximalist here. What the Rambam is talking about is v'avdil eschem min ha'amim. The Rambam is talking about separate patterns of thought, ideology, theology, virtue ethics, and that should then be reflected in, dress and conduct and behavior, the way that people speak. Should be different. I would say, today that should obviously extend to social media, that there's a certain refinement, a certain way of comportment, which is just, has to be an outward reflection of an inner, discipline, which I think is just so, integral from the Rambam's point of view, the Avdil Eschem Min Ha'amim. And again, when we see the mayhem, just the total mayhem. And sometimes I wonder to myself, I remember being in college and, we actually used to have to study. Like there was a lot of, papers and reading and assignments and lab experiments. So did these people actually do any homework, leaving aside, the anti-Semitism and mayhem and all kinds of other, problems, but, it makes a person, recognize that, the aspirations, to be, admitted, which, again, when these places really were elite and, were making great contributions to the world in so many different ways, that has to, of course, be, revisited as like, I'm just talking about substantively, not only because of anti-Semitism. The reason you should want to be in a place is because, they're doing very important and meaningful things there. That I think is lost a little bit in the whole discussion, which is that, a Jew has to have a certain worldview, a Jew has to have a certain virtue ethics. So even if it weren't a matter of, safety, which I think it is, and even if it wouldn't matter of despicable anti-Semitism, which it certainly is, but the question is, being in environments which are constructive, which, people are making, meaningful contributions, academic contributions, preparing themselves to make, very important, practical contributions to the world, that's lost in all of this. It's just, what is exactly being offered to the world? part of the malady here is that their self-righteousness is that they're literally saving the world. But, you know, for more objective observers, you'd have to wonder, you know, about being in an environment like that. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin, this becomes ground zero for those, you know, they take a more restrictive approach. I'm just going to describe it outside for a moment. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin is talking about, of all things, you know, capital punishment. And it's talking about, in particular, hereg, which is decapitation, not a very pleasant topic, but necessary for this discussion. So Rabbi Yehuda, suggested that because, you know, decapitation was done, you know, by, the non-Jews in a particular way, you know, with a sword, that the Torah would have to require it in the opposite direction, more like the French guillotine, not exactly, but, you know, from the back. And, you know, this is, challenged by the majority. It's a misa minufalas. And Rabbi Yehuda says, I know very well that it's a misa minufalas, but what do you want me to do? There's an isra of chukos hagayim. So if there's an isra of chukos hagayim, that means, you know, we can't be like them. So, you know, the Rabbanan, presumably, as the Gemara goes on to explain, will say, but what do you mean? You're not doing it because the Gayim do it. You're doing it because it's, you know, ksiv be'oraisa, that's one of the Torah punishments, you know, nakom yinakem, you know, cherev no kemes nikmas bris. So what do you mean exactly? So the Baalei HaTosfos, you know, immediately jump in. The cross-reference of Gemara in Avodah Zarah about Sorfin al Hamalachim, is Sreifa Chuka, does it, you know, meet these criterion? And the Baalei HaTosfos, you know, developed the idea that there may be, and this became the basis of the Vilna Gaon's position, that there are, you know, like really different categories of Chukos HaGayim. One of them is, you know, L'shem Avodah Zarah, that if something was affiliated with Avodah Zarah, even if, you know, there's something in the Torah that suggests that we would do it, we would then change, by definition, the way that we would do it. So just for example, you know, probably the most famous example of this, anybody want to jump in? There was something that, you know, became affiliated with Avodah Zarah. So even though it was something which was, you know, embraced and even, as we say, you know, ahov in a certain generation, it became sanui in a later generation. Anybody remember what that institution was? That was the
Matzeva.
Right, that was the Matzeva. So, you know, Asher Sanei Hashem Elokecha, Rashi says, you know, Avo Pisha Haya Ahov Bimea Avos. Tosus then comes back and says, but if it's not necessarily that kind of a chukah, Aval Hacha Ari Bechok Ovde Kochavim, Shalol Hashem Avodes Kochavim. You know, Dom Yedesayev. This isn't in any way, you know, affiliated with idolatrous worship per se. You know, so therefore, you know, the majority position, not like Rabbi Yehuda, but the majority position is that since you're not, you know, doing it in any way, you know, because they're doing it, you're doing it because the Torah says that this is one of the forms of capital punishment, it's not beged there, the Isser of Chukos Hagoy. Okay, so the Minchas Chinuch, you know, references a number of very important Rishonim, which I'll just, you know, summarize by virtue of showing you the Shulchan Aruch, and then, you know, the Vilna Gaon kind of strikes back in the opposite direction. So let's take a look here. This is the eighth and the ninth sources. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, "Ein holchen b'chukos ovdei kochavim v'lo medamin lahen v'lo yobash malbush miyuchad lahem." The Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam. Has to be a malbush miyuchad. That was the big question, you know, when I was in sixth grade, our blue jeans, you know, miyuchad lahem. V'lo yigadil tzitzis rosho kimo tzitzis rosho v'lo yigaleach miyatzdadin v'yaniach haser be'emtza, etc., etc. Now the Ramah makes you know, great impact here. It says Ella Yehe moved al bahim mabushav uvishar masav. You see, the Rama got that straight from the Rambam. V'cholzeinu also Ella bedavar shendagu ba'ovde kochavim l'shem pritzos. So the Rama already says that when we talk about chukos hagayim, we're talking about things that have a clearly licentious tone to them. Kigon shendagu lobosh mabushim adumim. So the Ramah says there are two real things that we're concerned about. Basically, one is Gilei Arayos, the other is Avodah Zarah. And things that are, you know, really inscrutable, things that they're doing, we have no idea why they're doing it. He says you've got to assume that there's some, you know, maybe forgotten, maybe long since, overlooked history of Avodah Zarah there. However, aval davar shenagu l'to'elas, kigon shedarka shekol mishu rofe mumcha yeshol malbush miuchad, what we call the white coat. This is for the Ma'arik. Shenikar boshu rofe uman mutar l'lov show v'chein chosen mishum kavod otam acher. You know, mutter. So things that, you know, don't have that kind of a rationale, but things that are for a purpose. You know, doctors wear white coats, you know, at least they used to. You know, you walk around these days, it's fewer and far between. They don't like to wear them anymore. It's, you know, part of the, you know, rebellion against formalism in other parts of the culture. That should be the biggest of our problems. But in any event, you know, these kinds of things are not problematic because it's important that the people should know who the doctor is when he, you know, when he walks into the room. I mean that, you know, medically it's important, you know, it inspires a certain confidence. If the doctor shows up in a t-shirt and shorts, you know, it's not going to be helpful to the mentality of the patients. They're going to think, you know, well, this guy just came in from the beach or he's headed to the beach, you know, and so that's an important principle, you know, and the same thing is true in terms of kavod. You know, there's certain, you know, groups of people, as you can see here, I'm still one of the few people in America that wears a tie. You know, even the presidents don't wear ties anymore. Ties are not cool. You know, but growing up, if you wanted to be, you know, a serious, you know, person, or at least meet your mother's definition of what that might, you know, require, so you wore a suit and tie. So mishum kavod, that's you know, appropriate dress. You know, I remember this was, you know, after they went for the jeans, but I remember, I think probably it's more like eighth grade, friends telling me that certain, you know, groups of Hasidim reject ties because of chukos hagayim, which is fine for them. I'm not trying to impose my ties on them. I'm just, you know, saying from this perspective, you know, I wasn't too concerned about it, you know, now or then. The Maharik is telling us that things that we do that, you know, have no pritzus to them and have no, you know, mishum, you know, just totally ein bahem toelas, so you have to be choshesh for avodah zarah, that's not a problem altogether. Other things, it may be worthwhile, it may not be worthwhile, but in terms of the formal restriction of chukos hagayim, you know, not so much. So that was the perspective of the Rama. I think that, you know, based on the Ma'arik and many others, so that's, you know, something that gained a lot of traction. The dissenting view, very famously, is the view of the Vilna Gaon, largely based on the sugya that we saw, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and the Gemara in Sanhedrin. So he says you know, he disagrees. He says it's mashmal hefech. I just underline this. And he comes back to the idea that the Bali Atosos developed, that there are really two dinim within chukos hagayim. Just to summarize this part. Torif divrayim d'shnei chukim hein, echad l'shem avodas kochav, v'za'asar, afbek tziva b'l'raisa, be'echad b'dvarim shel hevel ushtus, v'za mutar dafka d'ksiva b'l'raisa. So the Vilna Gaon says, no, it's not a matter of, you know, something that's shel hevel ushtus, something that doesn't have an apparent reason, that you have to, like, you know, be concerned that there's some history of Avodah Zarah there. It's prohibited until proven otherwise. Proven otherwise for the Vilna Gaon means it has to actually be explicitly, you know, given a permission structure, you know, in the Torah. Wow. So unless the Torah told you to do something, if there's something that doesn't have a very clear and defined toeles, so then it would be, you know, prohibited for a Jew to do, which means that, you know, like you're switching the default settings, essentially, that everything should be done differently, you know, unless it's an absolutely clear toelas, or, you know, it's ksiva b'oraisa, and ksiva b'oraisa isn't going to help you with things like matzeva, things like that have some association with Avodah Zarah. So, like, the most famous example of this, I guess it's coming up this time of year, but anybody want to, you know, jump in, this famous issue of the Vilna Gaon, where he says, yeah, even if it's, you know, totally indigenous, you know, to our practices, you know, it's Ksiva Be'oraisa. Not that this is actually Ksiva Be'oraisa. It's more of a Medrash, but the Vilna Gaon, you know, took a great stand on which issue? This is, you know, coming up. Okay, so on Shavuos, you know, how many, you know, how many people, I don't know how many people here, you know, have, you know, greenery in the shulin. Anybody have this? Nobody? Okay. Vicky has it. All right. Everybody here, you know, are Vilna Jews. Okay. So, you know, so the Vilna Gaon was very upset about that because he said once the, you know, once they got to it, you know, had their special trees. So he says, then it doesn't matter that we're doing it for our own purposes. Afagav d'ksiva b'oraisa, because it has, you know, an avodah zarah connection to it. So again, you know, these are issues that do come up, you know, in practice. You know, in our shuls, you know, a little bit choshesh for the Vilna Gaon. This is based on the comments of the Aruch HaShulchan and many of the other Achronim. So I think, you know, if a person got an evergreen tree, that would really raise a lot of questions and just wouldn't feel very right. But we just put some flowers, beautiful flowers, I think, in the front of the shul. And I don't think that's in any way similar to what they're doing. You know, and, you know, we make sure that they're very colorful and very summery. You know, that's sufficient basis for the distinction. Just to sort of prove the point in both directions that I was making before about the Rambam, and then, you know, to try to amplify it. So I was trying to argue that the Rambam's view is in some ways this combination of extreme ambition in terms of what the goals are. Muvdal, va'avdil escha min ha'amim, to reaffirm not just superficial an outward distinctiveness, but really, most importantly, you know, the way that we think differently about the world, that we're not just going to give in and say, yes, Israel is guilty of a genocide. Yes, Israel has no right to exist. You know, we're not going to capitulate, you know, to the, you know, intellectual tyranny. We're not in just like Avraham Avinu didn't capitulate to the paganism. There's going to be a certain resolute quality. And so that outward, you know, distinctiveness is a reflection of that inner distinctiveness. But then in practice, the Rambam, you know, I think had a certain, you know, openness in terms of, you know, beged ha-miyuchad lahem and other indications. So this to me is maybe the greatest indication. So the Rambam writes here about, after telling us that there's an issur d'oraisa of having certain haircuts, you know, the Rambam says the following. So Yisrael shaya karov l'malchus, he's an insider, you know, he's a member of the cabinet. Right, and it will be embarrassing, you know, if he doesn't have the right, you know, outfit. The Kesef Mishnah, you know, was very bothered by this. He says it's an issa d'araisa. It's not like an issa d'rabanan. Heimamru veheimamru. You know, b'makom tzar lo gazru rabanan, b'makom hefsed lo gazru rabanan. All right, b'makom tzarech gadol lo gazru rabanan. You know, because it's necessary. So how is that possible? So he says, you know, one approach. Yeshomer mishum hatzalas Yisrael d'sharu. It's like pikuach nefesh because you needed to have, people on the inside. Because if you didn't have people on the inside, you know, it's a sakanas harabim because you don't know when the next pogrom is going to be. That's itself very illuminating. Inami, right? He says, "Shatara lo pirta davar elo amra v'chuko seyam lo seylech." The Torah was like intentionally vague about all this. So masra davar l'chachamim v'heimro she'en ligzar al krovim l'malchus. So it says the rabbis will tell you, you know, what constitutes, you know, chuko sagayim. The Torah said this is prohibited. That doctrine I find very fascinating. It comes up in a few places. This is, the view of many of the Rishonim when it comes to, let's say, the Shari Nuyim on Yom Kippur, those who hold, like the Rambam, not like Tosos and the Rash, that things besides Achil and Shasiyah on Yom Kippur are also, you know, Asar Midaraisa. But the rabbis, you know, had a lot of a leeway to define what that is, so that's how a kala could end up being rochetsa says panah, you know, the melech, etc. There's some, you know, literature about this about melechas chol hamoed as well. For those who are on the daraisa side of that camp, so the point is that the Torah said this is something which is a problem, and the rabbis will tell you, you know, how to apply this, and it's just not going to be applied to Karov Lamalchus. Now, why would they apply it there? So again, one rationale, which the Kesef Mishnah himself articulated, was like, you know, Sakanas Harabim. It's just dangerous. You need people on the inside. Yumin Chaschinuch has a different approach based on the Bach, where he says, no, because the whole Mechayev of Chukos Hagayim, I just find this very persuasive, is somebody who's, you know, insecure, who has a certain basic sense of inferiority, and he's trying to be medam Elohim. He's trying to, you know, fit in, so to speak. And this guy, his kavana is not to fit in for the sake of fitting in. The reason that he needs this haircut or this outfit is, you know, to maintain this important position, you know, and, you know, his kavana is like pretty much the opposite. Right, his kavana is to, you know, even if you don't assume it's pikuach nefesh, let's say it's just dine mamonos, but he's trying to be there to represent the Jewish community in a way that's, you know, pretty critical. So he's not wearing that, you know, suit, you know, to try to get invited to the right cocktail parties and it'd be a Washington A-lister. You know, he's trying to do the right thing. So ve'ikar tale bechavana ve'halev yodeya. So the Bach, it's understood by the Minchas Chinuch, tells us that, you know, so much of it is dependent on, you know, what a person is thinking. So I just wanted to add that that to me explains the Rambam in both directions. In other words, the Rambam could be very permissive in a practical way, you know, as long as you're not talking about a Malbush HaMiyuchad Lahem, the Rambam, you know, could stake out that position. But conceptually, right, the Rambam was saying, no, va'avdil escha min ha'amim, right, sheyi Yisrael muvdal, that what you're looking for is an attitude where a person doesn't yield to, you know, certain ideas, you know, in the world. So today, again, just to, you know, really, I think it's so critical to emphasize this point. So, you know, even though the superficial behavior, you know, we see it in terms of, you know, the mayhem and the, and you know, the harassment and, you know, the chaos kind of a thing, but it really is rooted, as the Rambam suspected, you know, bimada'o uvideosav, it's rooted in ideology. And what the Rambam is telling us, va'avdil escha min ha'amim, what we should be thinking about, I think, you know, Parshas Acharemos, is the extent to which we have to really work very hard to extract ourselves. I think very few members of our community are tempted to be part of some kind of a siege on Hamilton Hall, you know. But in terms of the, you know, the underlying pathology, right? Where does this come from? So these people have convinced themselves that there's only one idea in the world, and that idea is called oppressor and oppressed, and everything in the world fits into this, you know, as I'd like to say, narrative. So, you know, Jews are whites, Palestinians are blacks, not blacks today, blacks, you know, during the age of slavery and Jim Crow. And you know, in any dynamic, you have an oppressor and oppressed, and the oppressors are privileged and by definition are, you know, seek to oppress those who are weaker. And all, you know, morality is to be judged by allying yourself with the oppressed, meaning there's nothing that the oppressed people can do. This was what October 7th tested this proposition, right? Really the worst thing that human beings could do, right? Slaughtering men, women, and children, the babies, the elderly, the rape, the everything, right? So now you see the worst form of human behavior. And what was the response? Well, you know, in context, it's virtuous because, you know, it was in service of the oppressed. So, you know, there you go. So that's the underlying idea. And so to be an educated person, it used to mean you had to read books and, you know, work hard and think very deeply. And, you know, you work very hard to be a scholar. Now to be an educated person, at best means to have arrived at the right conclusion. What's the right conclusion? The right conclusion is to be part of the encampment, to have a, you know, to be an ally, to be in solidarity. Any education that could be worthwhile serves that purpose. Anything that doesn't isn't, you know, worthwhile altogether. So this is one big idea, and it basically, you know, accounts for, you know, all of the behaviors that one, you know, observes. So, the resistance, term they would like, the resistance really has to be at that level, right? We're not going to say never camp in a tent again because of the encampment. The Rambam wouldn't say that. That's not a kli which is miuchad to them. Maybe the specific tents they had, it was coordinated, so they all had the same tent. But so I guess I wouldn't like to use that tent. But it's not really about the tents. It's about, you know, va'avdil escha min ha'amim, that we really have to resist, the ideology that contributes to, you know, what you know is such appalling and you know horrifying, you know, behavior that of course takes on extremely anti-Semitic and anti-American outward behaviors, but the ideology is really where the resistance is. So for the Rambam, I really like this case of the Karov L'Malchus. The Rambam could say, yeah, okay. So even if it is Miuchat, even if it is the Yisr Daraisa, but what's motivating this person is the opposite. So we're not going to be so concerned about the Malbush when we know the Deosav and the Maasav are just totally different. So that's an outer boundary case, but it really is, I think, the exception that proves the rule. It really gets you to what the Rambam was talking about here. And I think it also, to me, sheds a lot of light, you know, on that, you know, beautiful Medrash. We're just coming off of Pesach. We know the Medrash tells us, let me just, you know, read it inside with your permission. So the Medrash tells us, Rav Huna Amar b'shem bar kapara b'shvil arba dvarim negalo yisomim b'tzrayim shaloshinu eshemam ves leshonam v'lo amru lashon hara v'lo nimtza b'nehem echad parutz be'erva. So with respect to the first, you know, two, the different versions of this Medrash, sometimes it talks about Shemam, you know, Lashonam, Malbusham. The point is that the Jews, you know, despite our many, many, many failings, you know, in Egyptian culture, the Jews maintained, right, a certain, independence. They held themselves apart, Vayusham Lagoy, Melamed Shahayu Yisrael, Mitsuyanim Sham. There was massive attrition over time, for sure, but you know, the Medrash in its own right is incredible, because whatever the exact history was and whatever the process through which the Jews were, you know, unfortunately assimilating even at these levels, the fact that you could say that they were Zocha to Geula because of resisting, you know, Malbush and, you know, changing names and, you know, Lishonam, their language, which I take not only to mean their specific language like Lashon HaKodesh, but also their patterns of speech, as I said before, like, you know, one of the things, one of the things which is at the root of the problems in the teenage educational system, it seems like a very pedantic issue, but I think it's actually exactly what this Medrash is talking about, is that they have this very strange policy where they insist on referring to the students as scholars. Now, that generally I don't quibble about these things. But I refuse to engage that language because they're not scholars, not because they're not capable of being scholars. Maybe some of them will be scholars one day, but it takes many, many years to become a scholar of anything, whether it's to be a Talmud Chacham or to be a scholar of Chinese art. And the whole, you know, logic that, you know, here the adults have nothing to teach the children, you know, have to teach the adults. It's a Sodom, you know, orientation. I mean, not Arviad Zakein. Na'arim kodim, you know, lizakenim. It's totally antithetical. That's one piece of language that I refuse to yield to. I just refer to them as students, you know. And so far, they haven't thrown me out, you know, these meetings on that basis, you know, even if they would prefer. But I really think that's what we mean by lishonam, that you're not giving in, you know, to the, linguistic dimensions of the, you know, of the intellectual rot. I think that's as important as whatever language a person is speaking, whether it's English or Hebrew or French. They have developed a language, around, the movement, and I try very hard to use the version of English that I was raised on, because, you know, A, I think it's more precise, but also I don't want to yield to, trying to fit in, you know, with their agenda. And so I think it's really important to, you know, focus here on language. I shared with my family an amazing video. I thought it was an amazing video that was done in the immediate aftermath of the, you know, the riots at Columbia University. So they interviewed one of the protesters, they asked her about, you know, a variety of different things. She was cooperating with the interview until the questions became, you know, a little bit more difficult. And it was so interesting. So the interviewer said, you know, how do you feel about them holding the janitors, you know, hostage? You know, these, you know, people who are working, you know, the night shift, you know, I remember, you know, either them or, you know, people like them, you know, just trying to put food on their table. And here they get, you know, these people, you know, literally privileged college students taking them hostage forever long, you know, as part of their, you know, liberation zone. It's, you know, very deeply ironic. But I guess when your, you know, envy of Hamas goes so deep, you know, you have to have hostages of your own, even for a short time. So she said, her response was, I think that's a very false narrative. Okay, and I noted that. Then the guy says, and what do you think about the Jewish kids, you know, who feel really uncomfortable, you know, coming here? I think that's a very false narrative. It was so interesting to me that that's when she started using the term narrative. I was always very skeptical of that term because that term wasn't really used very much when I was growing up. But then I realized that it's a term that's, you know, specifically reserved for when you just want to lie but sound educated about it. It wouldn't sound very good if you would say, oh, that's false. You know, what do you mean it's false? It's a fact. It happened. You know, so it's a false narrative. Once it's a false narrative, so then who knows what that means? Now we've, you know, we've obfuscated. So Shaloshinu es Lashonam, I think, has a lot to do with resisting, not just, you know, saying, okay, we didn't speak Egyptian, ancient Egyptian, we speak, you know, Lashon HaKodesh. I think it has a lot to do with resisting the terms of speech in any, whether it's in a pagan culture or you know, the culture that we're, you know, fighting against right now. Every culture has language that develops around it, to support its ideas. So I think that's, you know, really, really critical, that we have to be very vigorous, you know, with respect to and very persistent in retaining, you know, use of, you know, proper language. I don't just mean, you know, refined language, which is always divrei chachamim benachas nishmaim, but also, you know, really not yielding to, you know, language which is designed to be an ideological tool. So, you know, that I think is also, you know, a very, very critical point and part of chukos hagayim. So it's not just malbush or sayar. I think that lashon also, you know, can sometimes be the most, you know, the most significant, and, you know, we have to be very careful about the language that we, you know, imbibe, you know, because it can really, you know, it can really lead us down, you know, dark places, and before you know it, you've made concessions that you never wanted to make, you know, by embracing certain terminology which is designed, you know, for those purposes. This last point that I would make from the Haftorah, and this, you know, really is a great nechama to me. You know, the Haftorah is really all about this idea. The Haftorah speaks of Yisrael La'amim, and in particular the challenges, you know, of galus, like we pointed out, you know, based on the Pesukim and Kedoshim, of you know, va'avdil eschem min ha'amim. So halo kivnei chushim atem li b'nei Yisrael nu mashem, halo es Yisrael ha'leisi meretz Mitzrayim. I wanted the Jewish people to be out of there. Plishtim mikavtor v'aram mikir. Hinei enei Hashem elokim ha'malcha chata v'ishmati osam yal pnei adama efes ki lo ishmid hashmid hashmid es beis Yaakov nu mashem. Hinei enochim mitzaveh Yisrael, the Jews like Navinad will be have to unfortunately go through this galus experience. Kasher Yinoa aret. So there will be like a sieve or a filter where the tzaddikim, you know, as the Mitzuda and the Radak explain, will, you know, will be spared, but others will fall through. Bacherav Yamusu Kol Chata Ehami Harmim Lo Sagish V'Sakdim ba'adenu hara'a. So those who held themselves apart, you know, from Klal Yisrael, they will end up being consumed, you know, in this process. You know, letzareinu harav, you know, we see that going on, right? You know, the editors of the New York Times, when they send in the people to write the articles, they say, you know, find, you know, the protest leaders and then find the five Jews, you know, who are in the encampment, you know, wearing tefillin or making Shabbos. You know, that's the program, right? So that's the article, and then you go write it. That's what the Navi Amos is talking about, right? That, you know, when this Vaniyosi b'chol ha'goyim is Beis Yisrael, so b'charev yamusu kol chata'e ami, that, you know, eventually they're going to be consumed by, you know, those, you know, whose ideologies, you know, they embraced, which is a tragedy. B'yom ahu akim esukas davin hanofales v'gadarti es pirtzehen v'arisosiv akim uv'nisiha kimei olam l'man yirshu es sheiris edom v'chol ha'goyim asher nikra shem yalehem n'um Hashem osezos. In the end, the Jews will be able not only to stand apart, but the Jews will be able to overcome, you know, the greatest of their enemies, Edom, which, you know, the Ramban always emphasizes. We are in the Galus Edom. Everything that follows the Galus Edom is Bechinas Galus Edom. And so we'll be able to, you know, overcome it. And then just to conclude with the beautiful words, you know, about Eretz Yisrael, when we're able to stand on our own two feet, so to speak, and not to be, you know, beholden intellectually, morally, to corrupt ideas, you know, Hine yamim ba'im nu Hashem v'nigash choresh bekat bakotzer v'darei chanavim v'oshe chazara v'itifu erim asis v'chog v'os tismogagna. The hills and the mountains are dancing, and, shuckling. V'shavti yeshvus ami Yisrael v'anu arim neshamos v'yashuvu natu chramim v'shasu asyenam v'asu and the Jewish people will be fully settled in the land. As to go back to the beginning, if you know, dereliction in terms of chukos hagayim causes exile, so now, you know, we have the full reversal of that process. In the end, you know, for us, v'avdil aschem min ha'amim, the pride and joy that we take in Torah values, the clarity that it gives us, you know, mitzvah Hashem bara mi'iras einayim, as we find, you know, really the world staggering, trying to, you know, get a grip, just not knowing what to do with itself, so deeply confused. You know, there is a feeling of sadness, and like I said, of cheshbon hanefesh in terms of what we would want to achieve, what's possible to achieve in an environment of that nature, you know, what the goals should be. Everybody has to think about that. But, you know, at the same time, there's also a quiet sense of pride in, you know, having these eternal, immutable values from a society that has disintegrated. But, you know, Torah is, you know, as strong and true as it ever was and always will be. And, you know, that I think is the dominant feeling of one of, you know, a quiet sense of pride and mission, you know, that we have. Ushmartem b'schukosai v'smishpatai asher yasa osam ha'adam v'chai bohem kihem chayenu v'orach yamenu. We see how much vitality they truly bring us. And I wish everybody a wonderful Shabbos.